Hello, I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and welcome to the In Conversation With series, a series where I speak to notable figures in the realm of financial services. Listen as they share their personal journeys, thoughts on the industry, and advice for aspiring advisors. Today, I'm joined by Carla Langley. So, Carla, if you can give a better introduction of yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Kimberly. Hi, everyone. My name's Carla Langley. I am owner of Langley Consultancy, if the name didn't give it away. And I suppose just a bit of a background on me, in case those you don't know me, is my business very much focuses on two things, really. Lots of training and development and events around regulation, compliance, risk, supporting businesses with all of that kind of stuff. And also, we do a lot of consultancy work with businesses on a one-to-one basis, regulatory businesses, of course, and working with you really closely, actually, to try and interpret, I suppose, just this whole world of regulation and risk, and interpret it into your business in a really meaningful kind of way, and a way that means you can carry on running your business really commercially and not be drowning under compliance and regulation and all the other stuff that we hear about. So that's a little bit about what I do, and I'm sure we can talk about loads more of that as we go through today.
Okay great so what was your start in financial services? How did you enter?
Yeah, good question. It was about 18 years ago now, actually. I know I don't look old enough for equality.
No, not at all.
About 18 years ago, I actually started in financial services by accident, as I think most people probably do, actually, from back in that time, just inadvertently ended up here. So my story is a bit of a strange one. I went to medical school to study to be a doctor. So completely
massive pivot.
Yeah, completely different. Dropped out in year one for numerous reasons. And actually primarily financial reasons. We're just from an ordinary background and I couldn't afford to stay at university. I ended up dropping out of university. And the only job going at the time, so I went to the University of Leeds, and the only job going at the time in Leeds was with the Bank of Scotland, in an admin position in the financial planning part of the business. So that's how I ended up in financial planning. I just took that job because it was the only one that was on offer. And thought this will do for now. And then, 18 years later, I'm still in the industry. So that's how I got into financial services and financial planning. So yeah, I started right at the bottom, doing administration with no qualifications whatsoever, 18 years ago.
Wow, that is such a pivot from wanting to be a doctor into financial planning that that's one story I've yet to hear.
I have to say, though, I'm quite glad it happened, because looking back now at my younger self, who was desperate to be a doctor, I would have just been an awful doctor, actually. I've just not got the patience for people, so. Particularly people who are moaning about illnesses. So I look back now and I think, yeah, everything happens for a reason. That was
definitely. No, I had the same, I had a similar path, except I didn't do medicine, but I thought I wanted to be a scientist, biomedical scientist, and I, instead of doing the smart thing and dropping out my first year and going on to do something that would take me to where I am now faster, I finished that degree, and then I was like, okay, now I'm gonna go and do what I actually want to do. I wish I'd had kind of that mindset to be like, oh, this isn't gonna work out for me.
yeah and get there a bit faster.
yeah but I guess, like you said, everything happens for a reason. So I did see that you worked leading mergers and acquisitions at Aberdeen for a substantial amount of time as well. And that is something that I notice is quite a mainstay in the industry. So I've always been quite curious about that side of dealing with the acquisition stage. What is that process like, and how do you do it in a way that's seamless Is that something that you also cover with your consultancy as well?
I do. So yeah, I did. I was with them. Well, they were 1825 at the time, and obviously now that everyone's rebranded in the now Aberdeen. But yes, was on the team over there, involved in all the acquisitions, which was really interesting. It's an interesting space, isn't it? Because I absolutely do work with firms in that space now, and particularly looking at things like the. How do you transition a firm? How do that whole acquisition process? How do you buy someone and then transition that firm into your business? And how do we make that really lovely and nice for clients and nice for everybody involved? It's really, I think that whole area is really interesting, isn't it? Because I think particularly the last couple of years, we've seen so much activity in that space. And we've seen some firms do it incredibly well, actually. And I think there are businesses out there who are acquiring and have got that process really well nailed down. And then there are other businesses who are not doing it that well, to be really honest. And I think it's a really interesting space to be. I think from my perspective, and particularly in my career, the really interesting thing that I got to see, and obviously in other roles as well, is that going out into advisory businesses that are looking to sell and really getting to know them and going, actually, is this a business that we want? Is this a business that we want to buy? And I think it's really interesting from my view in having that exposure and that experience to be able to go around the industry and take a really close look at these advice businesses. Because I think one of the things that particularly my clients who are advice firms, one of the things they don't get to see is how other businesses operate really on the inside. So I think for me to be able to have had that experience in other roles, you can bring so much now to your clients in terms of going, look, I know what the industry really looks like. I know what firms really look like on the inside. And that's really quite interesting, but really challenging as well. I think the whole acquisition space, as I've said, I think the whole acquisition space is challenging because you're typically buying smaller businesses. You've got a completely different culture, a completely different way of working, and you've got to try and slot those in, particularly for some of the big acquirers. You've got to try and slot those businesses in to your business that operates very differently. You've got very different risk. You've got very different processes. Things are much more stringent. And it's that culture shift, actually, that I always find is the biggest problem for people, is moving from being able to work in a very kind of loose and we're just one office and we just, you know, we talk in the office and we don't write things down because we talk to each other and all of that kind of stuff. So then being pulled into a bigger organization where there's so much more structure around how things are done. And there is, I think that's the biggest problems you face on the inside with acquisitions, is sometimes that cultural shift in terms of how it feels to go from one type of business to another. So it's interesting. It is interesting.
I can imagine the learning curve as well, going from maybe like a small business where things were just communicated in a Monday morning meeting to, you know, being absorbed into this other bigger company where you have to learn their processes, and they need to like set aside a day to be like, this is how we do things, right? And I think that would there'll probably be some issues that would arise from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's a change for everyone, isn't it? I think there's real change that people have to deal with. I mean, if you're an advisor, you're a paraplanner, you support staff, it's a real change in terms of how you work, particularly if you're used to working in a smaller business where there's maybe less structure. I think it's a real change to what you're used to. And actually, when you're the owner of the business or director of the business and it's being sold, I think one of the biggest challenges you then face when you're at that level is you're used to being in charge and you're used to calling the shots and you're used to making all these decisions, and then all of a sudden you know you're on a, I don't know, 2 or 3 year period, earnout period, so you've got to stay with the business for X amount of time, and during that time suddenly you're not the boss anymore, suddenly someone else is dictating everything to you. So I think it can be a really uncomfortable process, as I say. And I think actually one of the things that has been really good from my consultancy perspective and working with businesses in that space is actually getting them to understand that before they move into that process, is actually, this is going to be really uncomfortable. We can't get away from that. There are going to be things that it's just not going to feel very nice, but it's just how it is. If you're selling your business, that's just how it is. So you need to be really prepared and really ready to go through that. And everyone across the business needs to be really prepared and really ready to go through that as well, because it isn't going to be nice at times. There are going to be frustrations, and it's about being really realistic, I think, about what that's going to feel like for a period of time.
Yeah.
What does it say? There are definitely some businesses out there who are doing this much better and are actually having those really open conversations when they're talking to firms that they want to buy, in terms of, look, this isn't going to be a nice process at some point, but you need to be aware of that. So it's interesting though.
Being very transparent is important in those processes, I think. So Carla, before we hopped on this, you were talking about how you were speaking to someone about consumer duty. So I was interested to know what kind of questions you've been getting lately about consumer duty. Is there confusion around it, or, you know, like what's a common theme that's coming up for you?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Loads of questions on consumer duty. I think the real common theme with consumer duty is, how is it any different to treating clients fairly, to putting clients' best interests first? That's the real common question I get. And I think a lot of planning businesses, advice businesses are probably struggling a little bit to get their head around that. How is it any different? Aren't we supposed to be doing this stuff anyway? Mm-hmm. And I think what the interesting thing with consumer duty is, and I promise it is interesting, is the fact that with consumer duty, what we have to remember is this is a piece of regulation, right, that has been designed for every type of business in financial services. So it's not just for investment managers or advisors, it's for everyone's, and that includes your insurers, car insurers, banks, all of those kind of people as well. So we have to remember that we operate a little bit differently to some of them already. In the advice space, we already have different kind of rules compared to some of those types of businesses. So when you sometimes see the headlines and you hear the commentary around, it's a game changer, it's a fundamental shift for financial services. Yeah, absolutely it is. Particularly if you're a car insurer who exploits people left, right and center. Double your renewal premium. They make it a nightmare to be able to cancel your insurance. When you've got that kind of thing going on, I think you can see that's where it's going to be a fundamental change. But when you move over to the advice space and you look at the kind of things that we're doing already, absolutely, there are going to be things that advisors have to do, but they are not going to have to change to the same extent as some of the other people in financial services. And I think that's a message that I want to get across, is this is a one size fits all piece of regulation. And what we have to do is just interpret it to what it means to our little area. And actually, in our area, we already have suitability. We already have treating clients fairly. We already have clients' best interests first. So actually, if you're in a position where you read the consumer duty stuff and you go, oh, it's going to be a fundamental change to my business, you've got bigger things to worry about, quite frankly, because hopefully, actually, you should be in the position where you go, right, we're doing most of that stuff already. We just need to probably evidence it a little bit better. And I think that's where most advice businesses are when it comes to consumer duty, is going, we're doing all of this stuff. We're pretty confident we're getting good client outcomes. But what we're not that good at is evidencing and documenting and making sure we can prove how we're doing all of this stuff. And I think that's the piece of work that most advice firms are going to, and investment management firms too, are going to have to go away and look at and go, actually, can we evidence this? We think we're doing the right thing, but have we got the right evidence sat in the background? So yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, to me, when I hear about it, I'm just like, it seems like a given. It just seems like what every business should be doing. But I guess there can be some people who are a little bit confused and think that maybe it's the lack of like qualitative element to it. There's no way to prove in terms of numbers and figures and be like, this is how we're hitting that target. And I think that might be
Yeah, there's a lot of interpretation, isn't there? I mean, I was speaking at an event not long ago. One of the questions I got asked was, we were told by our compliance consultant that we won't be able to charge our 1% ongoing fee anymore. Is that true? And I was like, no, that's not true. There's nothing that states you can't charge your 1% ongoing fee. But what you've got to be able to do is be able to evidence why, if you're charging a 1% ongoing fee, why that's good value for your client. And if you can do that, you can charge your 1% ongoing fee. If you can't do that, you need to go away and think about what an appropriate fee is for your client. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's not about there's a one size fits all, because every advice business is different. Your clients are different. It's about just looking at your business on a really individual basis and going, okay, can we evidence? And you're absolutely right, Kimberly. It's really tough actually to actually evidence that in a really kind of physical, tangible way, because there's so many intangibles with all of this as well. But I think from my perspective, look, I love compliance. I know I'm a bit strange. I love compliance. But what I'm trying to do with all of this is turn it into something meaningful. Because with Consumer Duty, I actually think it's a great opportunity for businesses to kind of just reset a little bit and go, do you know what? Let's just take this opportunity to have a proper look at our business and go, actually, maybe our fee structure is a little bit wrong. It might be a little bit wrong. And that doesn't mean it's too much. It might be too little. But as part of this whole piece of regulation, you've got this great opportunity now to just take a step back and go, actually, let's just look at what we do. Because we don't normally get that time to do that, do we? We don't normally get time to just take a step back and just go, let's just take a fresh look at everything we do as a business. And I think it's really important that anything to do with regulation, if you're going to do something, it needs to add value to your business. And actually, you can do that with Consumer Duty. It can be really valuable to your business if you are taking that time to go, actually, let's just look at what we do. And does it add value to our clients? Mm-hmm. And hopefully the answer will be yes. Interesting one.
It is very interesting. And as you said, you love compliance and risk. So what is it that, what is your approach when you're going to consult with a business when it comes to compliance and risk?
Yeah, I think, you know what, maybe my approach is a little bit different to maybe some others, insofar as that whenever I work with any businesses, and those businesses that work with me know that I say this, which is I never ever segment compliance as a thing on its own. And what I mean by that is I work with businesses first and foremost who just happen to be regulated. And I say that to everyone I work with, which is, you are a business, you just happen to be regulated. And as part of being regulated, there are certain things that you have to do. But those things that you have to do, which is all your compliance stuff, should never just sit on their own in isolation and a compliance team here and they just do compliance. Because actually, you're a business. So what we have to do, and this is what I'm really passionate about, Kimberly, is trying to take compliance as being this like thing at the side that everybody hates, and actually remembering that actually the important bit is going, we have to do all of this stuff. So how do we do all of this stuff in a really commercial way, in a way where we can still make money and it's not drowning us and we can be really efficient? And from my view, that's what I try to do with my businesses, is go, right, okay, we know we have to do this stuff. The FCA asks us to do it. So what we have to try and do is be quite imaginative. How can we take these rules and put them into our business in a way that's commercial and it's not just going to drown us? And I think one of the things I've been quite, I suppose, vocal and quite passionate about is that in historically, particularly in this space, I think we've just been a little bit unimaginative, to be honest. I think we just throw stuff at firms and go, you've got to fill this form in, or you've got to fill that in, or you've got to do this, or you've got to do that, without really taking a step back and going, actually, all we're doing is just swamping this business. And actually, we've got to be quite clever with some of it. So I always say to everyone I work with, you're a business first who happens to be regulated. And what my job is to go, how do we operationalize some of this stuff you have to do into just your day-to-day processes, so it doesn't feel like you're bogged down with compliance, just feels like you're just running a business. So that's And it's tough. It's really tough because actually the really easy way to do loads of this stuff, as we've done in the past, is to just not really think about it. And, I don't know, throw new forms and new documents at advisors and they have to fill this in or they have to fill that in, or you've got to get your client to do this. But I think there's, you know, there's loads of other ways we can do this stuff and still achieve the same outcome. So yeah. I'm trying to just bring a bit of a change to that space to go, let's start to just be a little bit cleverer and imaginative around how we do some of these things, and actually remember that we're working with businesses who are trying to make money at the end of the day. So we have to remember that bit and not forget that actually they've got, you know, we need to be efficient and we need to be commercial and all those kind of things.
Yeah. What are some common mistakes that you find with some of the businesses that do approach you with regards to compliance?
Yeah, I think, you know what, there are some real common things that come up, some real common themes. For me, the most common thing that I come across with the businesses I work with is actually doing too much. And I know that might sound a bit bonkers, but what you often find is, and again, I go that point that most of the firms in the UK, advice firms in the UK, are smaller advice firms. So the biggest proportion of advice firms in the UK tend to be around 5 advisor firms. So they're relatively small firms. And what you tend to find is they're just doing way too much on the compliance side in terms of the processes that have been put in place are just over the top for the types of business they are or the types of things that they do. And typically the reason they're so over the top is maybe, I don't know, they're using some outsourced support. And outsourced support is usually, you know, they have to give support to a range of different firms. And if you're Evelyn Partners, for example, one of our biggest, you know, big national firms, of course they have to operate a certain way. Of course they do. If you're just a firm with a local firm with one office, maybe 10 staff, you don't have to operate to that same standard. And I think that's one of the things I see so often is these just over the top processes and procedures that are in place. And you go, well, you need to be proportionate with this stuff. You're only a one office, 10 people firm. Actually, we can be a bit more sensible with maybe how we do some of these things. So I think that's really interesting. It's a real common thing that I come across, which is about going, actually, let's take a step back and let's just start again and actually start to think about what are some of the risks that we're trying to deal with in this business. And actually, are we just going a bit over the top with some of this stuff? And quite often you find that firms are, and that might surprise you actually, but they are. There's so many firms who just do too much because they think they have to. And you can't go, no, you don't.
Yeah.
But Kimberly, I hear this all the time. It drives me mad. I see it everywhere. And advisors always say it, we're over-regulated. And they moan so much about it. And if you've ever said this to me, you'll know what my response is, which is we are not over-regulated. Most of the rules, bar maybe one or two, most of the rules in the FCA handbook are just really good business practice. You do it anyway. Even if it wasn't there, you would do it anyway. You're not over-regulated. The problem we've got is that we've not really given much thought to how to implement that rule in a really sensible way. So then it starts to feel like you're over-regulated because someone's told you it's a really daft way to meet this really basic rule. So for me, that's what I'm really passionate about. Okay, well, the rules are not silly. The rules are actually quite sensible. It's just we've got to be really clever in how we put them into the business. And the way one firm implements that will be very different to one of the big national IFA businesses. So that's common what I see is smaller firms just trying to operate in a way that the big national firms will operate. And they don't need to. They just don't need to.
Yeah. No, I think that makes complete sense. And hopefully less of those missteps will be made as people kind of, I don't know, get their head around it. What is your view of the future of the industry? Do you have an optimistic view or are you a little pessimistic? Like, how do you feel?
Oh, I'm really optimistic, actually. I think, look, I've been in the industry 18 years and I've seen so much positive change during just my time in the industry, actually, across loads of different things, not just in terms of what we offer and what we do as an industry, but all the really positive change about females in the industry and all of that kind of stuff. There genuinely has been a real shift in the industry. So I'm really optimistic. I think you know, we see so much in the consolidation space as well. And I know we always hear in the press, you know, about consolidation and there's not going to be many firms left and all of those kind of things. But actually, what's really happening when you look at closely at the consolidation space is actually there's been loads of consolidation activity. But we're also seeing coming out the other side of that is the younger advisors who don't want to be acquired by a bigger firm, actually coming out and setting up on their own and setting up fresh new advice businesses with real focuses on proper financial planning. And for me, I think that's been the nicest change to see over the last few years, is that real shift away from just product selling, salesman type role, which to be fair, it was when I very first started in the industry. That's what it very much felt like, is you were just flogging products. So I think now a point where there's this real shift to proper financial planning. And I love that. I think it's been such a nice shift seeing that. And I'm really positive about the direction of travel and where we're going in the financial advice space. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad to hear it. I am. So I guess I'm going to wrap up with the final question that I usually ask everyone. For anyone who might be seeking advice, you know, you went from, you know, starting off as an admin and financial planning and then now owning your own consultancy firm. I think that's one area that our, you know, audience hasn't heard from. So what would your advice be to someone who's kind of maybe looking into getting into this area, this space?
I think, you know what, my advice would be, don't be afraid to move about into different roles. Because in my career, I've done a bit of everything. I say that all the time. I don't think there's a role within an advice business that I haven't done. So from being admin right through to where I am now, I've done a bit of everything in between. And I remember particularly earlier in my career when I'd moved from one job to another, and I kind of started to feel really worried about it, thinking, oh, is this going to affect my long-term career plans if I move or having different types of roles? And actually it's been the opposite for me. I think one of the best things for me is that I have done all of those different roles within an advice business, and I understand those different roles, and I understand all the different parts of a business and how they fit together. So for me, I think particularly if you're still early in your career, don't worry too much about moving into different types of roles and how it might look, because actually that experience is just, you can't put a value on that. To be able to understand how different parts of the business work and fit together is so valuable. So for me, I think that's the best piece of advice that I can give, is don't be afraid to deviate from just a linear career path, because actually it'll probably really help you in the long run.
Yeah. I think I can take that advice on myself as someone who has worked in several different areas within publishing and media. It gives a broader understanding of what goes into the business, to the point where you just feel like, maybe one day I'll just end up doing it myself. And that can be quite empowering. So yeah, thank you for that, Carla. Thank you for speaking with me today.
Thanks for having me, Kimberly.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation With. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.